The Museum of You, written by Karis Bray and read by Katie Sobey.
Chapter 1. This is happiness, Clover thinks, as she hefts the watering can and an old bucket. The clear arc of sky, the melty sun, the hum of insects, the smell of growing, the reds and browns of the fences dividing the Tetris pattern of plots, every shade of green, the warm air, her heaving effort, the way the stones crunch under her trainers and the dust rises, coating her bare legs. She moves with deliberate, tightrope concentration, shoulder blades cresting like sails as water laps the container's edges, and she tenses to avoid spillage. No one else is here, because it's the hottest part of the day. Dad would prefer her to wait until the evenings when it's cool and the water doesn't evaporate. But mosquitoes descend as the temperature drops, and their bites wheel and burn, even when she manages not to scratch. Once, she had to go to the walk-in centre because her ankle went all balloony and Dad had kittens, literally. So she will water in the day, when the allotments are empty and the sun toasts the topsoil into a dense crust. This is work, she thinks. This is doing. Her face is slick and buttery in the heat. She licks her lips and tastes salt. School is finished, and the summer is hers. All of it. She uses the can first, and when it is empty, she refills it with water from the bucket. She waters the onions, already big enough to fill the palm of one of Dad's hands, and then the carrots. She gives the peas, their curly stalks yellow and crispy, an extra helping, by way of apology for coming at this time of day. Although something got to the cabbages and they look like skeletons within days of being planted out, they have, to an extent, recovered and are growing sparsely, 3 or 4 leaves to each plant. She sprinkles the last of the water over them and then scruffs back down the dusty track to the tap, empty can and bucket swinging. She listens to the tumble of the water as it fills the can. Little spits splash her legs, damping the dust to dirt. Just before the water spills over, she twists the tap shut. Then she lifts the can aside, replaces it with the bucket, and lets the water go again. When the bucket is full and the tap is tight, all is quiet. It's only as she walks back down the path that her ears rediscover the whisper and throb of the living things. She waters the pumpkin plants, her idea, for Halloween. Their leaves are rhubarbish and furry, the papery petal fingers of the remaining yellow flowers still clenched, like fists. She waters the potatoes and the different types of broccoli, and when she has finished, she hides the empty can under the corner of a large square of carpet that Dad has placed over a spare weeded bed to blind the new shoots of stinging nettles. She unwraps one of the carrier bags tied to the handlebars of her bike and fills it with runner beans, careful to select only those that are tender and smooth, leaving the thick, stringy pods to dry in the sun for next spring's seeds. She picks 6 enormous onions and a few carrots, just to see. The carrots are fat at the top, near the leaves, then they taper into wispy, pencil-thin roots.
Waste of time, Dad will say. I don't know why I bother.
But he'll change his mind, and next year they'll try again. Along the back wall, in between thickets of stinging nettles and the flowers she and Dad planted last spring for Mr. Ashworth's bees, crocus and bluebell bulbs, rosemary and pussy willow cuttings, there are raspberries. Clover picks a handful and sits on the carpet, legs crossed. The berries are fat and dusty,